This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
All right, it is 6:05 in the evening, and of course, I guess the big news from the weekend was all about Port Dickson, right?
Yeah.
This was the big by-election. It signaled Anwar's return to Parliament. It was a seven-cornered fight, and we had a wide range of competitors from the independent running on principles, Stevie Chan,
yeah,
to, of course, the infamous Saiful.
You had Issa Samad.
Former Mantri Besar.
Yeah.
Of the state.
And of course, you know, a lot has been made about some sort of the big numbers, right? So Anwar Ibrahim, of course, surpassed his predecessor's majority of 17,710 votes in the 14th general election. He did increase it by about 5,850 votes. He did so with a turnout that was markedly lower, of course, close to
57%, I believe.
Yeah, for a by-election, which is pretty good.
So actually it's very good because the previous, there have been three by-elections already, right? So this is the fourth one. The previous three have had very low turnouts. I mean, I think they were in the 40s, sub-50s for sure.
Yeah.
So for a by-election, this in itself, Anwar seemed to have drawn a much bigger crowd.
And not only did he do that, I think midway through the campaign, you saw, of course, the appearance by Dr. Mahathir as well. And that was a significant moment in a lot of the question marks about the Port Dickson move.
Yeah. Or it was last Monday, right?
Yeah.
And I guess Anwar had been campaigning for about 7 days by that point, and then he probably just went, where are my buddies? Like, you know, I mean, because last week you saw a huge influx of all of the ministers coming in and everyone campaigning on his behalf. And I don't know. It felt a little unnecessary for a by-election, right? I mean,
well,
when you roll out the big guns like that, it's because you want to make a point with numbers.
Well, I think not only that. I think, you know, the voters of Port Dickson are pretty savvy as well. They knew that this was not just just another by-election. And this was an opportunity to look at what are the interests of Port Dickson first and, you know, whatever the net effect of, you know, the fact that the current MP might be the next future prime minister certainly plays into that entire narrative, right?
Because whatever the principle might have been for many of these candidates standing, I think for the voters of Port Dickson as well, there is this notion that, hey, it must be pretty good having an MP who's going to be prime minister. It means our constituency will get well taken care of.
Well, at least that's the premise of it. I mean, irrespective of whether MPs are going to turn out to be prime ministers, they
or
should
not
be serving their constituencies.
Well,
we're going to be speaking to Bridget Welsh, Professor of Political Science at John Cabot University, right after this. Stay tuned to the Evening Edition. It's BFM 89.9. It's Uma and Ezra on the Evening Edition. I've been talking about the results of the by-election that took place this past Saturday. Dato' Sri Anwar Ibrahim has returned to Parliament as the Member of Parliament of Port Dickson.
That's right.
Big win. Of course, he surpassed his predecessor's majority of 17-odd thousand by about 5,850 votes. A huge sort of endorsement of the entire move. And of course, we're going to find out a little bit more about what we can make of the PD elections. On the line with us is Bridget Welsh, Professor of Political Science at John Cabot University. Bridget, thank you for joining us on the Evening Edition. Talk to us through this. Did Anwar's huge majority win come as a surprise to you?
Anwar Ibrahim's majority is not a surprise at all. Obviously, he has a lot of support in the constituency and worked hard to win that constituency. But at the same time, there wasn't significant competition, an organized, systematic competition. And the competition that did exist was divided, and I think even divided within itself, as you can see in the case of UMNO. So we see a situation where, you know, Anwar had pretty much very clear ground to win very successfully. I think what's important about this is to look at the voter turnout, which I think is considerably lower than one would expect in this type of contest, with only less than 60%. And this is, I think, worrying, given the fact that the by-elections have not, as a whole, engendered consistent support and turnout from large sections of the population.
Bridget, what led to this majority, particularly in view of how the other candidates performed?
There are three really important things to observe here. First of all, not only did we not have an organized Barça Nacional, we had a candidate that was a traditional warlord contesting, Issa Samat, and he didn't even actually win enough support to maintain his deposit. And I think this points to really two things. First, the erosion of support for UMNO. And at the same time, it also shows that UMNO itself is divided on its strategies ahead. So I think this is one important feature. The second interesting thing about these results is the fact that PAS did quite well. The fact that it came second speaks to the fact that PAS actually is seen as gaining traction and maintaining traction even in areas that it traditionally doesn't have political support. And we can see that in GE14, PAS won 31% of the Malay base. While it varied in different regions, traditionally that had not been the case in places like Negeri Sembilan. And we now see this is actually shifting and actually indicating something, an interesting trend for the future. And the third fact that I think is pretty straightforward is that the independent candidates did not gain traction despite the fact that they raised a lot of important messages. And I think this reflects the fact that this was very much a campaign that was overpoweringly controlled and dominated by Anwar. And those that did come out to vote really reaffirmed their support for him and reaffirmed their support for the new government. But they know that independent candidates will not be able to deliver things to them. Many voters prioritize being part of the system, having representation in the system with someone who is established and will have power or seen to have power in the system, as opposed to the issues that the independent candidates were raising.
Bridget, talk to us about, the purported value, of having a prime minister, or in this case, I guess, a future prime minister as your member of parliament.
I think that there has been, especially in by-elections, greater attention to what the candidate can do for you. So, for example, if you will recall after the 2013 elections that Telok Kemang was won by the president of Gerakan and DAP lost that seat, in part because of promises of delivery and services and improved access to power. And I think that the issue of deliverables is an important one, and this is one of the anchors that Anwar placed on his campaign, besides issues of reformasi and others. And so I think that people are conscious that they will actually potentially gain traction and gain access and hopefully better levels of representation in terms of service delivery and that through having someone who's seen to be powerful in the system.
Does this majority win for Anwar give any indication that he has the public support to become prime minister?
I think that no matter what happens as things move forward, this by-election cannot be fully seen as a mandate for Anwar to become prime minister. He will need a mandate from the people at large. And I think right now the Pakatan Harapan government is working under a mandate for Mahathir Mohamad as prime minister. And while, Anwar has won a decisive victory to come into parliament, one cannot equate that with him being governed and being chosen as prime minister. He has the mandate has to come from the nation, not just one part of the nation.
Bridget, will Dato Sri Anwar's victory, despite the image of the by-election as a quote-unquote forced by-election, will it have any lasting impact on his path to becoming prime minister?
The steps for Anwar Ibrahim to become prime minister are multiple, and I think what we've just seen through this election is the first step. I think the questions now will be what paths he takes and how he works with others inside the Pakatan Harapan government and how he works with other parties and other individuals in the political system. A lot of this depends on whether or not Anwar is going to be patient and not put pressure on the Mahathir government, whether or not he'll choose to be a player in that government or will choose to be more outside. And I think that ultimately a lot of the decisions are going to come not from Anwar, but also from Mahathir in terms of how he chooses his exit strategy, what sort of legacy he'd like to leave behind. So I think that it's a gradual process. And I think from the perspective of those of us looking at this, there are two issues to watch for. First of all is how much of this is going to be, representative of the will of the people, aka that there is not going to be elite negotiations of different actors that don't necessarily reflect what the mandate of this current government was. And the second aspect of that is how much of this is going to destabilize the efforts of trying to govern in the current government. And so this issue of destabilization is very concerning because it has an impact not just in government but also in terms of the economy and others. And so I think the next step will be what sort of working relationship they can develop in parliament and with the government and the different roles that they're playing as collaborators, as partners, and if that relationship is seen to be constructive as opposed to, at this point, with high levels of uncertainty, it has not created enough confidence that there is a solid working relationship between these two men.
Well, Bridget, we now have both Mahathir and Anwar back in parliament. How do you think that's going to play out?
Given the speculation about the relationship between Mahathir and Anwar, I think one of the most important issues is how they will both work together in a more collaborative fashion. So far, there's been more speculation, negative speculation about the relationship, despite the fact that there has been efforts on both parties to try to reach out. But given the fact that the division within Pakatan Harapan has been something that is of a national concern and being raised in multiple areas, I think the next key steps will be what sort of assurances that they can work well together, given the fact that they now have very prominent roles. And this is where their respective engagement with the media and this kind of interaction on the issues of solving or addressing some of the issues of Malaysians will be very important. There is a worry that the rushed nature of entering parliament, the divisions and mixed messages that are being sent in terms of collaboration with different partners and different actors and so forth, that this will actually continue to burden the Pakatan Harapan government. And the Pakatan Harapan government has enough on its hands with actually governing without having these issues of division being very much perceived in the public eye. So these steps of trying to ameliorate that division and to work in a more collaborative fashion will be very important. If they don't happen, you're going to see this speculation continue.
Bridget, talk to us about, I guess, this expectation with regards to the transition of power from Tun Dr. Mahathir to Dato' Sri Anwar and how that's supposed to begin.
It's very clear that among some, there's an expectation that Mahathir should start to give away, and among others, that there is a sense that Mahathir should not give way. And I think these issues of managing expectations in a careful and an organized way is quite important. But coupled with that, there has to be a sense that there is some sort of working trust between these two men. And that seems not yet to be fully evident. It needs to be clear. The general perception is this was going to be a two-year period. And now many people are questioning whether or not that is the case and whether or not there is actually going to be splits within Pakatan Harapan. So as a result, I think what will be important now is to be pretty clear about what's the timeline ahead and to keep to that timeline. Otherwise, if that doesn't happen, I think you're going to see a situation of government turnover, internal turnover, and I think this is going to help to erode trust within Pakatan Harapan and, importantly, with the public.
And, of course, Bridget, Anwar is now saying there's no rush for him to take over from Dr. Mahathir. How true do you think that is?
My own view is that if there was no rush, there wouldn't have been any by-election, or rather, there would not have been a by-election such as this one and the timing of it. I think that there clearly seems to be indicators that there is rush and eagerness to have a transition.
Well, Bridget, thank you very much for joining us on the Evening Edition for that analysis. That was Bridget Welsh, professor of political science at John Cabot University. And, you know, just going back to this whole discussion about where is the intent here? Actions sometimes speak louder than words. And she mentioned there about you know, how we can sort of make sense of this transition of power, or of what's going to take place within the next year and a half, 2 years.
Right, let's just take a quick look back at Anwar's first press conference after being pardoned by the king, right? I mean, his initial statement was, you know, I'm going to spend time with my family, I've been in prison for a while, I'm going to travel the world and give lectures. And
Georgetown University.
And even some Middle Eastern countries.
That's right.
I'm not just speaking to the white people.
That's right.
Right? However, I mean, I think we need to put another point into perspective. Everyone is talking about the transition of power to become prime minister. I think this move has less to do with those 2 years and more to do with internal PKR party politics, right?
Well, there's that element as well.
Yeah, I think there's a tremendous amount of pressure within PKR, and I think maybe Anwar and his boys were worried that if he waits for 2 years, what if he gets, you know, for lack of a better word, screwed over by his own party?
Well, of course, you know, the party was very, very successful at the 14th general elections.
Yes.
Simply because they've gotten the most seats in parliament. And you do need to make sure that the ship remains steady, given the context of where UMNO is, where it passes as well.
Correct.
You do need to solidify
that base. You've got to take advantage of their weakness, right?
Absolutely. So, folks, WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio. What do you think of this past weekend's result in Port Dickson with regards to the by-election? We'd love to hear from you as well. 7733-2900.
All right, we've got one WhatsApp in from Angin who says, no-brainer victory for Anwar. What I am more concerned of is the transition plan between Tun and Anwar, which would have heavy implications on the future of the country. Yes, you and the rest of us, my friend, we're all pretty concerned.
All right, folks, we've got some music right now by the Beach Boys. It's Surfing. It's BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.